everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Spellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's wonderful having you join me today for another opportunity to have an in-depth conversation about topics that are really important for us to know about. And I have a really important topic that we will be exploring today. And before I go there, I just want everyone to know that there are a few days left if you'd like to enroll in a very special program that I am facilitating. It's an online program. It's an 8-week-long program. And I call this program the Ultimate Fat Loss Program because this is the program that allowed me to transform my body, losing 30 pounds in 4 dress sizes. I encountered a very unique new paradigm, as I call it, 6 years ago. And it has absolutely transformed my life ever since. I have worked with over 2,000 people now all over the world on this protocol. It's the program that will give you the results. It's not a diet. It actually is addressing the root cause of the reason why we have an inability to burn fat. So most of us, if we're carrying excess fat, like I was around the middle, you know, that little Buddha belly there, it's because there has something that has gone awry in the body's ability to get the message to burn fat. So we become very efficient at storing it and very inefficient at burning it as energy, as it was designed to do. So this is a protocol that reestablishes that communication with a part of our brain that controls metabolism and fat burning called the hypothalamus. And research has shown that it's the impaired communication with the hypothalamus that actually is stalling our weight loss or fat transformation, as I like to call it. So this is a protocol based upon this research that, to me, is the most effective, profound way to lose this extra weight, which is, as we know, so dangerous. In fact, my experience was, and generally people lose, and listen to this, a pound a day. And this is not exaggerating. And by the way, it's a pound of this visceral fat. It's not a pound of water. It's not a pound of your muscle mass. It's the actual visceral fat, which is the source of inflammation and excess estrogen production. So I have a unique program coming up. It's an online program. I'm working with people from all over the world. I will provide you with the key pieces of this protocol, which are specific products that actually facilitate this restored communication. And along the way, I will also be teaching you more pieces of the weight loss puzzle, what else I've been researching for the past 6 years to ensure not only success on the program, but long-term success, and how to really understand the pieces to support our metabolism and maintain the amazing transformation that you get on the program. This program starts on Monday. So if you are interested, please go to my Facebook page, which is whatwomenmustknow.com. And I have posted for the last month or so various pieces of information and interviews. The most recent interview is with one of the participants in my program who lost 100 pounds. And wait till you see how fabulous she looks. No saggy skin, nothing flabby about her. And she is such an inspiration for all of us, what's possible. So check it out. There's still time to participate. As I said, this will be over 8 weeks. We'll be doing it online, live calls. I will be there, ongoing support throughout the entire program. And I absolutely guarantee these results. In fact, I do offer a money-back guarantee. So as I like to say, you got nothing to lose, but if few of those ugly little nasty pounds you're carrying around, check it out. I'd be very honored to support you on your journey to greater health and healing. So speaking of the journey to greater health and healing, most of us have already heard the news that Angelina Jolie has gone through with her second surgical procedure, this time removing her ovaries and fallopian tubes based on her fear that she has this BRCA gene, which, by the way, stands for breast cancer susceptibility associated gene, whatever that means. And we're going to find out what that means because it's not what you think. And she has gained international attention on this plight of these BRCA genes. And, you know, I hate to place a value judgment, but my perception is, you know, self-mutilation of her most important endocrine organ, the ovaries. And what's the story here? What's really going on? Because so many women pay attention to what Angelina Jolie does and are concerned about this potential gene and what it would mean for them. So we're going to explore this topic today, and we are really fortunate to have with us, to understand what's going on about the BRCA gene and what we need to know from Angelina Jolie's surgeries, Dr. Christine Horner is my guest today, and she is a nationally known surgeon, author, and professional speaker, and holds two board certifications, the National Board of Surgery and the National Board of Plastic Surgery. Dr. Horner was recognized as a leader in her field shortly after starting her plastic and reconstructive surgery practice because she successfully ran a national campaign to pass laws requiring insurance companies to pay for breast reconstruction following mastectomy. Her five-year crusade with the Breast Reconstruction Advocacy Project led to the passage of an unprecedented federal law that was signed by President Bill Clinton in 1998 requiring insurance companies to pay for a specific surgical procedure. Dr. Horner is the award-winning author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Christine Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer. And she is one of the country's leading authorities on cancer prevention. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Christine Horner to the show. Hello, Christine.
Hi. Great to be with you.
And it's great to have you back. It's been a while since you've been with me on the show.
A couple years. Yeah.
So, yes, long overdue. And I'm just so thrilled that you are tackling this issue and this question because it's so confusing for everybody out there and so fear-based. And we're going to kind of decode what's going on with the BRCA gene and with breast cancer risk and ovarian risk and surgeries and all the, you know, all the issues associated with it. And I just want to say, I don't know if you saw today, I posted this on my Facebook page. It was in Green Med Info, and the title was, Is BRCA a Death Sentence? Did you see that, Christine?
I didn't. I've been working away here.
Okay. It's something you really want to know about because the journal PLOS, P-L-O-S, that journal, just published a groundbreaking new meta-analysis that basically says there is no real evidence that the BRCA gene is an 87% increased risk for women for breast cancer and 54% risk for ovarian cancer. And they have basically gone in and debunked this whole theory that has been taken up by oncologists but without any real solid foundation.
Right.
So that's what we're going to talk about because we have to really share with everyone listening what's going on. So first of all, we diffuse the fear and we diffuse this panic of this BRCA gene as a life sentence or a death sentence, really, and just get us more enlightened and empowered. And, you know, Christine, I thought a good place to start would be at the very beginning and talk about this BRCA gene and what is it really?
Sure. Yeah, so the BRCA gene, there's a number of different types of mutations of this particular gene. But first of all, the gene, everybody has it. So we have the BRCA gene, one and two genes, and they are classified as what's called tumor suppression genes. And so what they do is then in a normal situation, when they're normal, they're producing proteins that help to suppress the growth of tumors. In addition to that, they also participate in the repair of our DNA. So our DNA is getting damaged all the time from toxins and oxygen-free radicals, and we have repair systems that are in place that will recognize the damage and repair it. But if you have the BRCA1 gene mutation, meaning that there's an abnormality in this particular gene, then the repair mechanisms don't work like they should. And one of the things that they can tell is if they do blood samples of women with the BRCA1 gene mutation, for instance, they'll find a lot of increased amount of DNA fragments in the blood, which is, again, these broken parts of the DNA that don't repair themselves. So that's the main functions that those genes do. And if you have, there's many different kinds of mutations, but certain mutations, you know, that can occur, mostly the BRCA1, but also the BRCA2 genes. If you do not have the correct function of it, what it does is the proteins that it makes to suppress tumors actually are deformed and kind of shortened, and they don't do such a good job at trying to do the tumor suppression. And then also there's a problem with the DNA repair, which leads to these mistakes that occur. And anytime there's a mistake in our DNA, it will pass on incorrect messages. And the researchers have found that the major thing that happens with the abnormal messages is an increased risk of cancers. So we hear so much about the increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer, and it is true that it's higher now. The rates that Angelina Jolie was quoting was way higher than what is kind of known, you know, in the medical research. It's much lower than that. But it also increases the risk not only of breast and ovarian cancer, but also cancers of the cervix and uterus and pancreas and colon and stomach and gallbladder and even melanoma. And men can have the BRCA1 gene mutation too, and they're at a higher risk for developing prostate cancer at a younger age. So the National Institute of Health actually had a table as far as listing the percent increase for the BRCA1 gene mutations, and there's quite a range. So for breast cancer, that it's, you know, 40% to 80%, and this is a lifetime risk. So it's if you live to be 80 years old, because your risk goes up the longer, you know, you live. For ovarian cancer, it's only 11% to 40%, you know, top. So it's actually your chances of getting it are less than your chances of developing it, even with the BRCA1 gene mutation. And then male breast cancer, so men will get diagnosed in 1% of all breast cancers that are diagnosed in men, but the risk for men if they have a BRCA1 gene mutation goes up from 1% to 10%. Prostate cancer can go up to 39%, and then pancreatic cancer risk can go up by 7%. So that's kind of the main thing, you know, with what they are and kind of the damage they can do. But before I end with that, I'll segue to there's so many things that you can do that can dramatically lower your risk, and that's, you know, what I love, you know, concentrating on.
So I have a question. Is this BRCA, this breast cancer susceptibility, what do they call it, associated, that's what they call it, that's what BRCA stands for, is it the actual mutation of the gene, or is it a genomic SNP issue?
No, it's a mutation is how they, you know, describe it, but there's many different, I mean, there's dozens and dozens of different types of them, so there's only a couple kinds that are actually linked with a higher risk of the cancer. So it's more complex, you know, than what you would think, that they, you know, definitely classify it, you know, as a mutation. It runs in families, you know, for sure, and it goes through, you know, the genetic lines where you've got a 50% chance of inheriting, you know, that particular defect. It's more common in certain populations like Ashkenazi Jewish populations, I think in Poland and a few other places, you know, like that too. So it's actually a little bit more common in Europe, you know, then the Ashkenazi Jews, like I said, will have a higher risk of that. So it definitely, you know, has all the traits that we see as far as a genetic mutation that gets passed down, you know, as a lineage. Now, the other thing to mention with this is that it's very rare, like exceedingly rare, like less than 1% of people will have a BRCA1 gene mutation. So we hear about all of this, but the reality of it is that more than 99% of people here in the United States in particular, they don't have this. You know, you may say, oh, you know, everybody in my family had breast cancer or something like that, but then you... situation is that the reason it runs in your family is not because it's genetic, it's because you all ate the same food, you all managed your stress in the same way, you all, you know, did, your lifestyle was in a similar way, so that's why you're seeing it in a family rather than it being genetic. But even if you do have this genetic predisposition, as I said, there's many, many things that you can do that can dramatically lower your risk where it's, you know, not even significant.
So why do you think there's been so much publicity and focus and, you know, attention in the media to an issue that is affecting really such a small percentage? And I just want to add, in this Green Med article, it talked about this PLOS study. It said, this is what's really scary. It says, furthermore, prophylactic removal of the ovaries before age 45, and Angelina Jolie is 39, has been linked to 67% increased mortality risk, according to a 2006 study published in Lancet Oncology, indicating that organ removal as a generic form of cancer prevention may be doing the opposite of saving lives, as was explained.
That's well, you know what? The studies that I did a huge literature search in all of this recently, and so the doing a kind of review study looking at all the different studies is that absolutely there is an increased all-cause mortality and premature death when the ovaries are removed before age 45, but the numbers that I got were way higher than that. They were saying 170% higher of all-cause mortality in women who have their ovaries removed before age 45. There's a 7 times higher incidence of cardiovascular disease. There's an increased risk of cognitive impairment or dementia, Parkinson's disease, osteoporosis and bone fractures, and, of course, a decline in psychological well-being and a decline in sexual function because, as you mentioned before, I mean, this is a castration. You know, it's amazing to me. When I was a surgeon, I'm just ridiculous. So when I was a surgeon, I did general surgery residency and board certified in general surgery as well as plastic surgery. So we did, you know, hysterectomies. And, you know, at the time when we were doing surgeries like that, it would be like, oh, you would just take a woman's ovaries out, you know, to prevent them from getting ovarian cancer in the future. And it was like, what? I mean, let's take your testicles out and see how you do with that one. I mean, it's amazing to me that it was even thought of like this is an okay thing to do, you know, to women. Now, giving people hormone replacement therapy helps in some of these, you know, situations. It says that if you don't, you know, replace with hormone replacement therapy, then it's really, really bad because they go into sudden and severe menopause. But it doesn't eliminate, you know, all of these, you know, conditions. So, you know, is that the right thing to do? And I would argue that in most cases it's not. And again, there's many things that you can do that the research has shown where they've tested certain natural products, foods, you know, supplements and so forth that in the specific effect that they have on the BRCA1 gene to see that it actually cuts the risk of these cancers by, you know, 200% or more. So I would argue that there's another way.
Good, because we need to talk about the other way. And this is important information for all of us because it's a small percentage of people who actually have this gene mutation, so it's really not affecting most of us. However, the more knowledge we do gain about the strategies and the foods that optimize our hormonal levels and detoxification pathways and all the things that are crucial pieces to keep us healthy will support everyone in optimizing their health. And there's, you know, at a certain point in our conversation, I do want to address some of the increased risk factors for breast cancer for women on any hormone replacement, bioidentical hormones or HRT, based on some of the research I'm doing with nutrigenomics. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But I want you to share with all the listeners some of the, you know, important strategies that you've been researching, because this is really your passion, is empowering women with the strategies that are preventative, that they can start, you know, understanding, implementing in their lives, and becoming really empowered with as a result of gaining this knowledge. We do not want to be in a position of fear, which, by the way, you know, research, recent research on genes shows that the fear will alter your genes and increase your risk.
That's right.
That's
exactly right.
The fear.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you know, Angelina Jolie said in her op-ed, and to her credit, because, you know, she didn't do this in the original one with the breast surgery, but she said, you know, she chose, you know, to have this surgery done, and it was, you know, not solely because she had the, you know, BRCA1 gene mutation, and she said that, you know, she talked to many other doctors and naturopaths and knew that there was other options, and some women, you know, would choose to, you know, use some alternative medicines and do some frequent checks, but for her, and, you know, and she said, of course, there's more than one way to, you know, deal with this. For her, it was, this was the right choice, you know, for her. Now, the other thing that she said also was that she recognized that doing the surgery doesn't make your risk zero, which is a fascinating thing. You know, when you do this, the breast surgery, they said, okay, now she still has a 5% risk, and you still have, you know, a certain percent risk even if you take your ovaries out. And then there's being prone to these other, you know, types of cancers that I mentioned previously, too. And so, you know, she said, well, I'm going to look into natural ways to strengthen my immune system. Now, that, of course, is a great kind of approach. And to me, a lot of the things that we know that are common denominators for increasing the risk, one of the ways that they work to increase the risk is that they're taking a hit, you know, on your immune system. And your immune system is, you know, what keeps you strong. So it's got all these different cells in it that will recognize foreign invaders, the cancer cells, which we form all the time. I mean, everybody forms cancer cells all the time. It's a natural part of our physiology. But if our immune system is strong, it will recognize the cancer cells and eliminate it. If our immune system is weakened, and that comes, again, from things that we traditionally know increase our risk, like staying up too late at night, eating junk food, being stressed out, eating sugar, you know, is another thing that really slugs the immune system, then those cancer cells that are naturally forming will start to grow out of control because the immune system's not handling it. So to keep your immune system strong, it's really kind of a holistic approach as far as the foods that you eat, and mostly a plant-based diet is, you know, something that we know that supports our health really more than anything else, and making sure that it's organic so it doesn't have the pesticides and the herbicides and everything. Getting, you know, exercise every single day is important not only for the cardiovascular system, but it's also got all sorts of kind of interactions in our genes and proteins it produces and so forth that helps to minimize our risk of really almost every single chronic disease, and including cancers. The other thing is really minimizing stress. Now, of course, we live in a stress-filled environment, and it's hard to control. A lot of things are out of our control. So that's why 5,000 years ago, the traditional systems of, you know, Chinese medicine and Ayurveda included doing daily effective stress-reducing techniques like meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, you know, one of those types of practices. Even breathing exercises helps to kind of balance your autonomic nervous system. It trains your nervous system to not be quite as reactive, and they find that it decreases the amount of some of the stress hormones that are released for similar stresses when you kind of train your nervous system to not be quite as reactive. And then a kind of a cheat way you can do it. So mushrooms, you know, medicinal mushrooms we found are things that will really help to support the cells in the immune system. And the formula that I really like is called active hexose correlated compound, or AHCC. So AHCC is something that has been studied extensively in Japan, and hundreds of studies that show that it supports every single cell type in the immune system, and it's so effective at doing that it reduces the risk of many different kinds of cancer, including breast cancer, prostate cancer, and they actually prescribe AHCC in the hospitals in Japan because the survival statistics are so much better with that. And then I'll just mention also they had this really exciting research that just came out of MD Anderson and the University of Texas Health Science Centers where they took AHCC and they tested it against the HPV virus. So the HPV virus, human papillomavirus, is something that's been really linked to cervical cancer. And in every type of cervical cancer, there's about a 99% incidence of finding this HPV virus. Hence, they've been, you know, using the HPV vaccines. At least they're trying to get our children to take those. And what they did in this research is that they tested the AHCC against the HPV virus, and they found that it killed the virus, prevented infections from occurring. They tested it in lab models and animal models, and then they tested it in clinical trials. And, you know, a couple other things to know, like if you get an HPV infection, which is a sexually transmitted disease, it goes away 98% of the time. It clears from your own immune system. And there's only 2% of the people where it goes on and becomes a problem, and usually those are people that are smoking, drinking, poor diet, you know, that has a poor immune system. And if you get that chronic HPV infection, then that can lead to cervical cancer, and people who have that, there's no effective Western treatment to clear that virus. Well, they gave it to these women that have these chronic HPV infections, and they found that the ones that took it for 6 months, it cleared in 100% of them. So now they're doing this much larger clinical trial, you know, to see if it's effective, you know, in higher numbers of people and what the percentages of it is. But, you know, here's something that kills the virus, you know, helps the immune system, and definitely you don't need to be taking a vaccine. That's a whole other show, but, you know, that has, you know, horrible side effects to it. But, you know, this is something, simple things, you know, that you can do to keep your immune system strong.
So Christine, so this product is readily available, and you were specifically talking about the risk for cervical dysplasia or killing the HPV the virus.
Correct.
And this is
AHCC. Yeah, you can just get it online, you know, Google it online, and that's, you know, the best way to get it. And you know, the company that I use is Quality of Life Formulas. I know there's, you know, there's other ones too, but that's the one that I do. And I just, you know, I think that's an all-around really great formula, you know, to take. It helps. I haven't had a cold, you know, since I started taking it, and I do all this flying and everything, so I'm very impressed with it. But definitely we got hundreds of studies showing it lowers the risk of all sorts of different kinds of cancers, including, you know, breast cancers, and also, you know, handles the HPV infection that would be associated with cervical cancer.
So good information for any woman who gets a pap smear and finds that there's, you know, some issue going on. The first thing, one of the first things they want to do is get that mushroom formula. And second thing I would suggest is they increase their folic acid B6 and B12 levels, because that deficiency is associated with a higher risk as well. So they got to clean up their act, and then there's supplements that really, you know, like those mushrooms that are targeted on the immune system, supporting and enhancing, which is great.
Right.
You know, this is great information.
Let's
talk about some. I know there's some of your favorite things, the curcumin, and the role of curcumin for prevention, right?
Yeah, so turmeric, or, you know, one of the active ingredients in it is curcumin, and, you know, that's a substance that we find in, you know, that's a bright yellow, orange colors in curries, and almost, I would think everyone's heard of it by now, because there's actually over 7,000 studies in the medical research on it. I mean, it's being researched at MD Anderson and Harvard and everywhere, and the research is, I mean, it's almost like it's too good to be true as far as all the things that it does, but they've worked out 150 different ways that it works, and all these different ways that it protects against cancer. So it inhibits the growth of 17 different kinds of cancers, and it's considered, you know, the number one anti-cancer spice because of that. Some of the other things, like my whole book actually is about everything that I could find in the medical research that either you need to avoid or you need to favor to lower your risk of developing breast cancer. But I found that everything that affected breast cancer was really the things that affected you for everything, you know, I mean, as far as all the other chronic diseases and ill health in general. It's not like it was super specific, you know, for that. So one interesting fact is that when they looked at these, going back in the kind of the genealogy historically in the women with the BRCA1 gene mutation, you know, estimates now, they're saying, okay, who knows, it's controversial, but, you know, at worst case scenario, it may be up to 80% by the time you're 80. But if they follow the lineage, you know, back in time, 100 years, they found that the incidence of breast cancer in those families was one-third of what it is today. So it was like 27% or something like that. And you can say, well, why? Well, because the same things that increase the risk in normal women without that genetic mutation are the same things that increase the risk in women with the BRCA1 gene. They can say, okay, if you're going to do all those things, you know, that we found as far as the diet and lifestyle things, you know, you're going to instantly, you know, dramatically cut your risk. There's certain things that we know are extremely beneficial in women with the BRCA1 gene and without, and those common ones like omega-3 fatty acids, which, you know, are the considered the healthiest types of fats that we can consume. They're found in flax seeds and wild-caught salmon and walnuts, for instance. And when they did testing on various different substances and the effect, the anti-inflammatory effect that they had, they found that omega-3 fatty acids had the highest amount of anti-inflammatory effects of anything that they actually ever tested. And then in addition to that, it actually has this direct effect on the BRCA gene. And so a French study that was done in 2007 found that omega-3 fatty acids were something that reduced the incidence of BRCA-related tumors by 30%. Now, another one we hear so much about is vitamin D.
I just want to stop right here. So what you are saying, the research you are quoting with, like, the omegas and with cumin, it actually reduced the incidence of breast cancer in people who had the BRCA genes as well as people that didn't. But you know, I think we just really have to emphasize the fact that with the proper targeted nutrition, we are supporting and optimizing these key functions and, I guess, enhancing these other tumor suppressor genes, because there are many that actually do the job of suppressing tumors. And just because some may be mutated, it doesn't mean that the system is not functioning or can't respond when given the right information, which is what so much of these supplements are doing. It's not just the, you know, the vitamin content, the nutritional stuff, also the genomic information that is given to support and optimize genes, which is such, you know, I just cannot emphasize this enough to everyone listening. You actually have resources, and, you know, what Christine is sharing with us right now are the resources that can keep us in a healthy zone, no matter what genes we may have inserited. That's a huge message.
Well, this is one of my very favorite ones. So, In Europe, they did a double-blinded placebo-controlled study, which of 200 different women with the BRCA1 gene mutation, because, you know, it's a higher, you know, there's little pockets of it that are higher. But basically what they did is they said, okay, so, you know, they look at the blood of the women, they find that they have this increased amount of, you know, fragments of DNA, and they said, okay, so one of the screw-ups that they have is in the repair mechanisms of the DNA. Well, the mineral selenium, which is, you know, dirt cheap to take, found in our soils, and is getting our soils kind of, you know, has a paucity of it in it now because of the way that we've done our growing practices. But, in, you know, when you have selenium-rich, you know, soil, we definitely know that selenium has these anti-cancer effects. Well, one of the things that they knew is that selenium is involved in the DNA repair mechanisms. So what these investigators did was they said, okay, let's see what the effect is of having women take selenium supplementation, so it'll help to correct some of that DNA repair mechanism problem. So they do a double-blinded placebo-controlled study, our gold standard, and they take 200 women with the BRCA1 gene mutation. Half of them get selenium, the other half do not. After 2 years, they check the blood of the women. They find that the women who are taking selenium, that their DNA fragments have improved so much that they're now normal levels, and the incidence of breast cancer was 200% lower than the women who were taking placebos.
Wow. And we never hear about that study, do we?
No. I never heard about it until I was researching it. Yeah. Now, ginkgo biloba. So, you know, ginkgo, the herb that, you know, is from China. So there was a study that was published in the European Journal of Cancer Prevention in 2011, and they tested ginkgo against the BRCA1-associated ovarian cancers, and they found that it prevented every single one of them in this one study. Then they did another study where they said that they estimated that ginkgo may reduce the incidence of ovarian, BRCA1, ovarian-related cancers by 60 to 67%.
Wow.
Something, you know, very specific.
Yeah.
Tea. We know green tea is like a, you know, a health drink. And so a study, 2013 study from China, showed that women who drank tea had an 80% reduction in ovarian cancer compared to people that didn't drink tea. And this is one of my fun-filled facts, too. So there's a drink, you know, most people, it gets demonized, right? But they found that women who drink caffeinated coffee and you have a BRCA1 gene mutation. So if you drank like one to two cups a day, it decreased the risk by 10%. If you drank 3 to 5 cups a day, it decreased the risk by 50%. If you drink more than 5 cups a day, it reduced the risk by 70% in people with a BRCA1 gene mutation.
Well, why is that? You're kind of wired for the day, but what is the mechanism there?
Well, because it directly affects the BRCA1 gene. So these things will interact, you know, with the BRCA1 gene, and it does it in a positive way. Now, of course, you could say certain people can drink some caffeinated coffee and they're going nuts. It's like, well, then don't drink it. You could drink tea instead. I mean, you got so many other options of things that you can do.
Yeah.
But if you
yeah.
love your coffee, it's not all bad, right? You know, it does have some lowering effects there. Flax seeds. Now, we know that flax seeds are something that are extremely healthy and preventative for any type of woman, whether she has a genetic mutation or not. The flax seeds are very high in the omega-3 fatty acids, but also have something called lignans in them. They have 100 times more lignans than any other known edible plant. And the lignans have about 12 different anti-cancer properties to them, including exactly like the anti-cancer drugs tamoxifen, exactly like Arimidex, and, you know, about 10 other different ways. And, of course, doesn't have all the terrible side effects with it. But they also found that people who consumed a lot of flax seeds had a significant reduction in the incidence of ovarian cancer. And, you know, so there's another one.
So, what about vitamin D? You were going to talk about
So vitamin D for sure. So this was something, you know, we know with vitamin D really acts more like a hormone, and we found, you know, hundreds of genes that it interacts with, and now we're realizing that in most disease states, vitamin D is low, which is true, you know, for breast cancer, ovarian cancer. And if you take vitamin D supplementation, they found, certain studies have found that it will cut the risk of breast, prostate, and colon cancer in half. And they're working out, I mean, it's really lovely how sophisticated we are now looking genetically about how all these things, you know, work. But they were looking at vitamin D in relationship to the BRCA1 gene when there's a mutation that was present. And so what they found is that vitamin D actually plays a significant role in turning off a pathway that activates that mutated BRCA1 gene, and it stops the growth of breast and prostate tumors. So another, you know, super important thing I think to do is to make sure you supplement with vitamin D.
And I think when we're talking about the vitamin D part of the puzzle here, we really need to also emphasize that people must get their blood test done, because you need to know what your levels are and be sure that they are at that optimal range, not just hanging out somewhere in the middle or lower end of that reference range. You want it at the high end of that reference range, which is providing you with the greatest protection. So taking vitamin D, I have to say, does not ensure that you're going to reach optimal levels. You have to have a marker. You have to actually know for sure. You must do that blood test. And if people don't have health insurance or they can't do it, there's, you know, some places where you can go and do it quite inexpensively. And one of them is, there's a place called the VitaminDCouncil.com, but that's not the one I was thinking of. It's the,
I don't. I mean, I can't help you out on this one.
I can figure it out before we come to the end.
But, you know, I totally agree with you, you know, on that, too, where it's like we definitely know it's, you know, super important. And the only way, you know, that you'll really know for sure what, you know, levels are best for you, because a lot of people will metabolize it differently or absorb it differently. So you may need way less or way more than your neighbor does, you know, too. So it's kind of a difficult thing to say. I mean, one thing we know for sure is that we used to recommend 400 international units a day, and it's, you know, recognize that that's way the heck too low, and that is probably most people, if you're healthy and you don't have any other, you know, health issues going on, that at least 2,000 international units a day of D3 seems to be you know, the minimum kind of dose. And then if you've got some disease states going on, so let's say, for instance, you were just diagnosed with breast cancer or something, it's not uncommon that you'd work with your doctor with very large doses of vitamin D for a while to get your levels up, and then taper off at that point, because in theory, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. So it could get toxic levels of it. It's real hard to do that, but, you know, your fat stores can fill up with it, and when you're checking blood levels, you don't actually know what your fat stores, you know, how much is in there, so you can potentially get to a place where you'd have, you know, too much, and there's some toxic, you know, side effects that can occur with it, although the more I've read about it, the more it seems like that's a really rare thing, even when you're taking, you know, large dosages, mm-hmm. but in theory, like I said, it is possible. Yeah.
Well, by the way, the website, if people want to order a test, it's vitamindcouncil.org. So it's vitamindcouncil.org, and you can order blood tests for vitamin D for about $65 or so online. And it is one of the most valuable tests I think we can do to just kind of assess our risk factors and make sure we're looking after ourselves.
Yeah, right, yeah. So another thing I just mentioned, too, is that, you know, melatonin, which is our sleep hormone, so there's this really significant association with your melatonin levels and your risk of developing not only breast cancer but many other diseases, but, you know, particularly breast cancer, because melatonin is not just our sleep hormone. It also is a very powerful antioxidant. It helps to decrease the amount of estrogen in our blood. Prolactin, which is another hormone that has some similar effects as far as causing breast cancer cells or breast cells to grow and divide more rapidly, and it also beefs up the immune system. So if you want to get your melatonin levels maximized, you actually have to go to bed by 10 o'clock, so before 10 o'clock, and get up before 6 a.m., which was actually the recommendations by Ayurveda 5,000 years ago, and modern science shows that that indeed is the optimal hours for us to sleep. So if you go to bed by 10 o'clock, there's a spike in melatonin that occurs between midnight and 2 a.m.
Right.
that you don't want to miss, because if you do, the consequences are rather spectacular, and we see a big increased risk of, you know, all sorts of different kinds of diseases, including breast cancer. Now, the other interesting thing is that they tested melatonin on the BRCA1 gene, and they found that it had a direct effect on the BRCA1 gene. So making sure you do the melatonin levels optimally, you can also take melatonin supplements. I mean, ideally you want to, you know, do it naturally, but you can take supplements, and actually that's recommended in people who are having cancer treatments. So when you're undergoing chemotherapy or radiation or so forth, they found that melatonin will enhance the effectiveness of the Western treatments while protecting against the organ damage and causing a significant increase in survival statistics. So like the Cancer Treatment Centers of America routinely prescribe it to their cancer patients that are undergoing treatment. But again, it also has a direct effect on the BRCA1 gene and lowers the risk of the BRCA1-related cancers.
So the thing I want to say about melatonin is that I think the best way to get melatonin is make sure you sleep in a darkened room, totally dark, which is why I sleep with a sleep mask, and also do not have any electrical appliances or chargers or cell phones near your head when
yes.
you're sleeping, because that has been shown yeah. to lower melatonin levels. So you've got yeah. to clear your sleeping space and make sure there is nothing on the other side of the wall where your head is, in the other room or wherever, you know, and God forbid you have a smart meter on the other side of your bedroom wall.
Right.
You need to change, right? You need to change your room. You've got to get out of there. And also tart cherry juice, right? Tart cherry juice helps to raise, is a healthy food that can help raise melatonin levels,
that's
what I've been
mushrooms,
told.
Yeah, mushrooms have true? Melatonin, you know, levels in them too. Yeah, so, you know, good points. I mean, there's definitely, we know there's a number of different things that can interfere with melatonin, and light, you know, super light sensitive, so excellent, excellent point that you've got to, you know, make sure that you don't have any light on in your room. And then the EMF, you know, electromagnetic frequency thing you were talking about too. You know, I built a non-toxic home in years past, and we had a shut-off, you know, valve to the electricity in the bedroom at night so
right.
that we would get no, you know, EMF there, because they've, you know, found that that's something that decreases the melatonin levels. Drinking alcohol, you know, is one thing we know for sure. Drinking one glass of wine is okay, but the researchers found if you have more than that, then the melatonin levels start to kind of drop precipitously.
I just remembered one thing. Uh-huh. One more thing about melatonin. My experience was, when I took it and I didn't need it, I uh-huh. actually found that it caused the opposite effect. I was more stimulated. So the thing about melatonin is you need to take it when you need it. That's why if you can build it up naturally by sleeping,
right.
it's better than taking it as a supplement,
yeah.
because some people have that reaction when you don't really require melatonin. And
yes.
the only time I take melatonin personally is when I'm flying in different
time
zones.
Right, yeah, because it helps with, yeah, exactly.
Gets
well,
rid
it
of
can
my
also
jet lag.
Cause, you know, it can cause you to have some wild dreams, you know, too,
yes.
where,
yes.
you know, I mean, it's known for that. And because I work with, you know, with cancer patients, they actually recommend the therapeutic dose is 20 milligrams, which is pretty high, and you have to build yourself up to it. But
yeah.
I've had patients where they're, you know, one of their major problems is that their dreams are just way the heck too, you know, wild when
they're very vivid,
it.
And they're very, yeah, they can get very bizarre.
Yeah.
So if we could recap, Christine, all these strategies, can you just put them together in a list of things that you think that we should be doing, first of all, that most of us should be taking on a daily basis that are just supportive and healthy and
mm-hmm.
and beneficial. And then are there other ones that you want to emphasize for people who have a risk, have had an incidence of breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
or are
mm-hmm.
at risk, they feel they're at risk for whatever reason, what they also must have as part of a core protocol?
Sure. So, you know, first of all, you know, none of these supplements and things work very well if you have a terrible diet and lifestyle. So you always have to have, you know, baseline, make a commitment, you know, to living the healthiest kind of diet and lifestyle that you possibly can. And we touched on that as far as trying to eat, you know, a really plant-based diet, organic, exercising, going to bed by 10 o'clock, reducing, you know, stress or some of the key components. And then, you know, there are certain dietary supplements that we know that are standout. Some of them are things that are, you know, good for everybody to take, like omega-3 fatty acids, I think is really something that's essential for good health in general, you know, that important, but also has specific anti-cancer properties to it. And then
how much would you recommend?
So, again, it varies, but I do, you know, I recommend doing, like, it depends on what amount that you're taking. I mean, it's like form that you're taking too. But like my favorite form is the omega swirls, you know, that Barlean's makes, because they're that delicious kind of fruit smoothie tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And you do two tablespoons of that a day. You can do more, you know, if you want to, but some people run into problems with diarrhea and stuff with it, so you have to be a little careful, but I say 2 tablespoons.
What I found, and I personally like fish oils better than plant-based omegas, but, you know, it doesn't matter. They're all good.
Yeah, it doesn't, right.
What I found, based on the nutrigenomic testing, is that people should have about 2,000 milligrams of EPA daily.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly high dose, because you don't want just the total amount in that capsule. You actually want the EPA, that active form of the omegas that's particularly beneficial. So that's what I recommend. So taking a little bit is okay, but you want to take a higher amount, don't you find? They need to have.
I always think it's good to favor a higher amount with omega-3s. I mean, I favor it in my foods and so forth, so I'm doing a lot more of that, too, just because, you know, what they found was, you know, you're supplying construction materials to your body, right? And whatever fats you consume, that's what your body makes itself out of. And, you know, fats are so important to us because our brains are coated in fat, our nerves are coated in fat, every cell membrane is made out of fat. So whatever you're consuming, that's what, you know, your body is making itself out of. And so what's been found is that if you have a much higher ratio of omega-3 fatty acids, your cell membranes are way more fluid and they function optimally. So that has this profound effect on your entire being, you know, from reducing your risk of arthritis to dementia to, you know, whatever. And so favoring them as much as you can supplementally and also in your diet, I think, is extremely important for overall health.
Yeah, good. Yep. Okay, anything else you think should be part of a...
Well, turmeric, you know, we talked about turmeric, so turmeric and green tea, I think, you know, supplementally, they're, you know, amazing because they both have phenomenal anti-cancer, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory properties to them, and they also have synergistic effects. So there's a study showing that if you combine green tea and turmeric, you can either do it in a supplement or, you know, have them consume them in the same meal, that green tea will enhance the anti-cancer effects of turmeric by 3 times. And turmeric enhances the anti-cancer effects of green tea by 8 times.
Wow.
So
yes,
if you know, food combined, you really get a multiplication of the health benefits from it. And invariably, we kind of found that in most studies, whenever we took 2 healthy substances and combined them together, they seem to have some synergistic effects with them. So it becomes incredibly simple, I think, to really dramatically lower your risk of these, you know, chronic diseases when you're, just being smart about what you're doing. Now, if you have that BRCA1 gene mutation, those are the same things, you know, that are going to be helpful. But in addition to that, very specifically, selenium, as we talked about, which has got a 200% lower incidence of breast cancer in 2 years in these women and helps to correct the unrepaired damage of the DNA, which is not only going to reduce the risk of the breast and ovarian cancers, but also the other related cancers that we know can be associated with the BRCA1 gene, which prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, melanoma, are some of them. So that would be extremely important to take for those individuals. And then the ginkgo biloba we also talked about, too, which is a couple of studies showing that it had a really significant reduction in ovarian cancer, the BRCA1 gene ovarian cancer. And then flax seeds, you know, I think, too, are really, the World Health Organization has called them a superfood, and because of the lignans in them, the omega-3 fatty acids and the fiber in them, they're just kind of all-around general health, you know, foods, but have very special qualities in helping to lower the risk of cancers. So I think that's another one.
And those are ground up?
Yeah, you absolutely have to grind them. You can't absorb them if you eat them whole. So I always laugh when I see the flaxseed crackers, you know, that have the whole flaxseeds. Because you're just going to poo them out.
Yeah, or crack your teeth on them or something, and they're so hard.
Yeah, you're not going to get the medicine from them. So you actually have to grind the heck out of them is what you have to do in order to get them to a fine powder. And some of the medicinal qualities are aromatic, so it's a good idea to not grind them ahead of time. You should, you know, grind them fresh as much as possible to, you know, take advantage of the highest amount of medicinal qualities that they have.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you've given us such great information. I just want to comment about, you know, whenever a woman has her ovaries taken out, which, as you said, is castration, and then they're put on hormones, right? So they're put on hormones.
Uh-huh.
And what I just want to say really briefly, because I know we're coming to the end of this conversation, but for any woman on hormones and bioidentical hormones, any kind of hormones, and I'll be discussing this in future interviews with people, but based on the 3 years that I have been working with nutrigenomic testing and looking at these various gene expressions and their impact on how they communicate to the physiology, I would say 95% of people I test have these glitches in their software, so to speak, that impairs their ability to properly metabolize estrogen, whether it's estrogen from their hormones, whether it's estrogen from environmental estrogens. They're all similar molecules. They have an impaired ability to properly metabolize estrogen, and the risk is that it gets turned into a much more reactive and like a super estrogen that contributes to the damage of the DNA. So hormones have to be really carefully considered, and if you're going to do them, and I never use hormone replacement in my therapy, in my practice. I have all sorts of other options that you never have to be on hormones, but you have to support this detoxification pathway of the liver, and you do that with very special broccoli seed extract products. So I'll be talking more about that.
Yeah.
So I just always have to say that.
Absolutely. I think it's just a really crazy thing when we start just dispensing hormones like we really know what we're doing. And it's I always liken to my specialty is in Ayurveda also, and so I always liken to it looking at the human body like a tree. And so if you're giving hormones, it's like being out there clipping at the leaves and the branches, where the approach through Ayurveda is to water the roots of the tree and make the whole tree flourish. And it's, everything that we talked about is really about helping to bring balance to the body, to enhance the body's inner healing intelligence. And, it's way smarter than we will ever be. And if you are nourishing your body, taking care of it in an optimal way, then your inner healing intelligence is going to be as smart as she can possibly be and will create the amount of hormones that you specifically need for you at your age, which no doctor could come up with. So I think that's a much smarter approach, and it's just real dangerous messing around with hormones, I think.
Well,
we don't know enough.
We've come, I couldn't agree more, by the way. And we've come to the end of the show, and I just really want to thank you for the tremendous amount of research you're always doing and for your passion in supporting and empowering women with truthful information. Christine, you're doing such wonderful work and such an honor to know you and to have you on the show. So
I feel exactly the same about you.
I know. We're sisters in arms here.
Yes.
And I want everyone to go visit your website, which is drchristinehorner.com. Is that correct?
That's right. So Christine is C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, and my last name is Horner, H-O-R-N-E-R.com. Yeah.
Christine has a great book, a great website, great information. So this is what it's all about. We're all working together to empower women with the knowledge to keep them safe and healthy. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's been such a pleasure and a delight to have you on the show, Christine.
Oh, thanks, Cheryl. And you too. I mean, just thanks for everything that you do. And, I think you do wonderful work.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you, all my listeners, for joining me for another opportunity to get enlightened and empowered with truthful information. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.